C2A. Number 10B.
Let's see what this implies further. I think as we go on, you will see that Christian Science is not a path of flowers, that it cannot be taken superficially, that I always said to my students at home, if you don't take it serious, my advice is leave it. Go fishing. That's much safer. Because if one is not absolutely honest and clear to understand the teaching, one is in great, great danger. Not in a small danger, in a terrific danger. And I would like to warn everybody who is trying to understand this science that we teach it to take it very, very serious and to be very, very in earnest, or he will experience what Mrs. Eddy shows in the rest of this chapter. So we go to principle and shows life as a principle and not as the counterfeit of principle, namely as a profession that we just profess to Christian Science and do not spiritually understand Christian Science. The text reads, why do those who profess to follow Christ reject the essential religion he came to establish? And Dawley could have asked, why do those who profess that Dawley is a big guy and a big shot and a terrific big visionary and a great caliber, why did they not follow his teaching and fell away? 98% perhaps fell away. You see, as long as he was a big shot in the movement, he was the teacher and the lecturer and the president of the Mother Church and a good practitioner and known over the place. Everybody wanted to be near John Dawley. Everybody wanted to look up to John Dawley and do everything. And the moment they had to face life, principle, they ran. Are we running? That's the question. Jesus' persecutors made their strongest attack upon this very point. You see, persecutors, the counterfeit of life, of going the way of life. Instead of going the way, you go against the way of life. They endeavored to hold him in the mercy of matter. As long as they would like to hold him as a material person, it was all right. But the moment they saw that he would have to be crucified and lose the body, they ran. And they would like to kill him according to certain assumed material laws. You see how cruel the human mind becomes against the idea of life when it doesn't see the signs of it. The Pharisees, the opposite of principle, claim to know and to teach the divine will. That's what happens. Everyone knows that he is teaching the right science. Everyone thinks that he is teaching the right science. They pop up all over the world and say, I can teach divine science. That's easy. I have gone through a class or two with Max or with somebody else. I know what is science and I teach it, and woe to them. They will fall very quickly if they have not really made that science their own and are really scientific thinkers. So they only hindered the success of Jesus' mission. All but then these people do, if they do not understand the science of it and teach it in the name of science, they are only stabbing the idea of science in the back. That's all what they do. And that can't be done without that you lose your head. And that's what Mrs. Eddy is going to say very soon. Even many of his students stood in his way. Gosh, do you think of that? That the students stood in his way. How many students did stand in the way of Mary Baker Eddy? How many students do you think were standing in the way of John Dawley? You haven't the faintest idea because you don't know the story. the history of John Dorley. And if you would know those times in the 40s, what he went through, because he was stabbed in the back by his friends and by those who professed to know what he was teaching, you would be surprised. This is no more a child's story. This is no more a child's story. A chapter on Atonement and Eucharist will face us with realities. Even the Master, had not taken a student and taught the unseen verities of God or of science, he would not have been crucified. Who crucified him? Not Pilate, not the Pharisees. His student crucified him. They deserted him. So that was always something that John Dorley would put into our heart and always would say, be careful what you do. Because if Jesus had not taken a student, he would not have been crucified. And if we would not take students, we would have a jolly good life. But because we take students, our life is not always very easy. It gives quite a burden, because we have to do with the ignorance of the human mind that just doesn't seem to be able to understand what one teaches. And that's a cross that is very, very heavy to bear. Because the determination to hold spirit in the grasp of matter is really the persecutor of truth and love. The moment we want to keep the spirit of science in the limitation of the human mind and in a material form, then we persecute really the advancement of the idea that is spiritual and that has a spiritual aim and wants to demonstrate that spiritual aim. While respecting all that is good in the church or out of it, one's consecration to Christ is more on the ground of demonstration than of profession. We have to demonstrate what we know and not just say, I'm a student of science, I'm a student of Dorley, I'm a student of Marx, I'm a student of this and that and the other. That doesn't work. We are a student of the science of being. That's our teacher. And therefore everyone must go back to the textbook and the Bible and to the science itself and say that one is being taught by that science and not by a teacher. In conscience, we cannot hold to beliefs outgrown. See, that's really the persecution, that we try to stay with our beliefs and stay with beliefs that are outgrown. Therefore, the persecution that persecutes the life to go forward, that persecutes the idea that it can go forward, is always that we like to stay in the old paradigm and judge everything according to an old paradigm, namely to the paradigm that we have been trained in the church over years and years and years, and never really can put that burden off and free ourselves, that we still hold to beliefs outgrown, that we are so ingrained with the method of healing through argumentation, through the affirmation of truth and denial of truth, that we can't get out of it, that we are still somehow holding back to the beliefs outgrown, which says, I can heal by reasoning from matter to idea, or that says, I can heal by reasoning from a material object to idea, and not see that this is old time metaphysics. We're still holding back to the old metaphysics. How can such a mentality ever see the science, the idea of science? It's not possible. And that's the persecution that then we experience, that the idea of science, which is the very opposite of ordinary metaphysics, that this metaphysics is persecuting the idea of science. All that is what is so difficult to make that paradigm shift into a new sense of life. we cannot really hold back to beliefs outgrown. So that finally she says, and by understanding more of the divine principle of the deathless Christ, we are then enabled to heal the sick and to triumph over sin. So here again you have that terrific principle of life that says, we are still in life as principle, that says the life that goes forward and forward and brings always new ideas forward, that must be seen in its principle, so that we are not holding that back with outgrown metaphysical concepts or with religious concepts or with just old humanistic Christian concepts. So that's the tone of principle. Yes, yes, yes. Isn't that quite something? To teach the science of life, principle life. And if we do it, then we can be quite sure that we will be persecuted. That's life as life. Because the old sense of things always persecutes the new sense of things. Therefore, an old paradigm always persecutes a new paradigm. Therefore, this very phenomena here, neither the origin, nor the character, nor the work of Jesus was generally understood. Can you see that it is something very, very, very difficult to make a paradigm shift and to see what a pioneer in the line of life is bringing forth, and to see what it is and to understand what it is? The disciples couldn't do it. Most of Mrs. Eddy's followers couldn't do it. She was always yearning that she would find at least one person that would understand it, and didn't find it, until finally she had to give it up and say, I have to leave the enfoldment of the Christian Science movement in the hands of generic men. I don't find a single student that understood me. And so it is always, all through the ages, that it is not very easy to really make that paradigm shift which the master, the teacher, has made, or which the pioneer has made. And therefore the pioneer is misunderstood. So Mrs. Eddy was misunderstood, John Dolly was misunderstood. That's, in all other religion it was so, the Buddha was understood, everybody that brings in something new, be it Einstein or be it somebody else, if he brings in a new idea, he will first, for a long time, be misunderstood. So that he cannot be measured aright. Therefore, can you hear that tone of life? Not a single component part of his nature did the material world measure aright. Well, if she makes such a statement in her textbook, we can know that this does not apply to some individual case, but that it is a fundamental phenomena, and therefore we must see that we are equipped really to have a true concept of a pioneer, so that we don't misunderstand everything. Even his righteousness and purity did not hinder man from saying he is a glutton and a friend of the impure, and Beelzebub is his patron. They couldn't really grasp what he was. They had eyes to see, they had ear to hear, they had all the five physical senses to see what he was, but they couldn't see what he was, because it can only be understood spiritually. And so it will ever be. We come to the tone of truth. Life now, as truth, gives another picture. Remember, thou Christian martyr. You see, the picture is not very bright on this whole page. No, not at all. He was deserted by his students, he was misunderstood, he was crucified, he was misrepresented. He was a martyr. So also this is something that everyone that really puts his hand to the teaching of science must be willing to be a martyr. Or he better doesn't go along with it. He better goes out and goes fishing. There he catches fish and he can feed himself. But all the other is a terrific undertaking. And only those who have not gone through that haven't the faintest idea what it implies. They only see the outward picture, how everything is nice and blooming. They don't see the labor. They don't see the struggle. They don't see the sacrifice. They don't see nothing of that happens unseen. So remember, thou Christian martyr, it is not enough if thou art found worthy to unloose the sandals of thy master's feet, to suppose that persecution for righteousness' sake. You see, it's persecution for righteousness. It's actually not persecution for unrighteousness. That is not a big question. But to suppose that persecution for righteousness' sake belongs to the past, and that Christianity today is at peace with the world because it is honored by sects and society, is to mistake the very nature of religion. It belongs to the very nature of a religion that the pioneer is persecuted. And he better makes up his mind that that is so, and that he lives with it and tries to live with it. Or woe to him, he will just go down. Error repeats itself, meaning that history repeats itself. What was true for a Buddha, what was true for a prophet, what was true for a Zarathustra, what was true for a Plato, what was true for Jesus, repeats itself through all the history. They are laws of being. So we can't say they don't exist. The trials encountered by prophet, disciple, and apostle, of whom the world was not worthy. They weren't worthy for the world. They began to see something very, very much better and higher. Await in some form every pioneer of truth. Not some pioneers of truth. Every pioneers of truth. And this is with what one has to live when one goes the way of life. Especially if one goes the way of life as truth, when one begins to see something that the old paradigm has not seen, and that goes against the old paradigm, that is an anomaly for the old paradigm, then we are in for trouble. And finally, we come to the tone of love. There is too much animal courage in society and not sufficient moral courage. What does it imply? Christian must take up arms against error at home. That's all right at home, everyone getting right with himself, but he also must take it up against error abroad. He must be willing to take on his shoulder the sins of the world. The ignorance of the world. The sins of the world are quite easy to carry, but to carry the ignorance, the blunt ignorance of the world, that's something else. It's hot, it's very difficult to fight that. But they must take up that error, not only at home, but also abroad. They must grapple with sin in themselves, that's all right, that they should do, but also in others. Jesus bore the infirmities of the world. He carried the sins of the world. We have to carry really the struggle with ignorance and sin and fear and with unscientific thinking today, with semi-metaphysical thinking today, and this is what is necessary to do for everyone. And so continue this warfare until they have finished their course. We can't go back. She says, here in love, you know, you have to go on and on and on until you finish, till you come right through, until you have worked it right through and nothing can touch you anymore. You can't go back. If they keep the faith, they will have the crown of rejoicing. That's the other part. There is not only a cross to carry on the way, at the end of the way, there is always a crown that awaits one. Therefore, Christian experience, see, it's still in the tone of life, it's a Christian experience. What is really Christian experience? Can you see that Christian Science is something different than to be a member of the church and go on Sunday in church and show what a new hat one is wearing and to say to the other what a nice hat you have and how you look well and so on and how. And so this is then being lovely to each other and love each other. It's so shallow compared with that terrific power of a divine idea that wants to work through every resistance. So Christian experience teaches faith in the right and disbelief in the wrong. It bids us work the more earnestly in times of persecution. Again, you have persecution coming in, because then our labor is more needed. So actually, every time when we saw that there was criticism coming up against John Dolliman, could always see that he made it a blessing. He could always make it a blessing because he was forced to think deeper about the thing, to investigate the subject further and further, and every time something new, something higher would come out. And this is what I have experienced over the last 40 years, time and time again. I have always been criticized because they never understood what I was teaching. I have gone through very difficult periods. I always came out better. I always experienced Noah. Here, the floods were coming. Well, at the end, I landed on Mount Ararat, on the highest point. Every time, it was just one way of making the idea stronger, of seeing the idea clearer, or of even of making a great mutation. And I could always see that when the persecution came, when the misunderstanding came, when the criticism came against the teaching, that was always a period where there was a paradigm shift at hand, and something new was coming about, and so it was always a progress, always. The critics would fall very, very, very badly. A tragedy, a human tragedy. Don't play with the idea of science. Don't play. I warn you. Don't play with it. It hits back very, very badly. And I've seen them falling by the wayside, on the right and on the left. We can't really play with the idea of science. You can play with religion. You can play with the religion of Christian Science. You can play with the metaphysics of Christian Science. Play with it. It doesn't matter, because that's anyway not Christian Science. Christian Science is only the idea of science that is seen in Christian Science. And that is the Holy Ghost to the age of today. And Jesus said, all sins are forgiven except one, the sin against the Holy Ghost. That will not be forgiven. That's life. Huh? Can you see now life? We ended here the tone of life. Can you see what life is in atonement and Eucharist? What life is that says, if you atone with the one life, that life which is based on the mind, creativity, which is based on spirit, as that which does not mingle with spirit, that has no mingling with semi-metaphysics, with semi-scientific attitudes, with mixing categories light, right and left, that has nothing to do with that. Life is spirit and is pure, and that is life. And that pure life gives to everyone the chance to find his true mission, his absolutely true mission. But you have to see that true mission and accept that true mission, or you share the life of all those 200 disciples and everybody which left no name, which left no name. It doesn't identify itself divinely. And so we begin to see that life is actually principle, that it is not just a profession to science and to a principle, that we profess that we are scientists. That doesn't make us a scientist, just to profess we are. It doesn't really matter if we speak in the terminology of science, if we really speak constantly about system and structure and cybernetics and paradigm shift and calculus and what else, huh? Just nice terms. If we don't understand them, we only profess to it, and this doesn't lead anywhere. Doesn't lead anywhere. So, life as life says, this is a big subject. The worldly mind does not understand it. The human mind cannot understand it. The unenlightened man cannot understand it. And therefore, it does the one and only thing that it can do. It persecutes the idea. It misrepresents the idea. It misconstrues the idea, that's all then, that the human mind can do, and therefore it will also persecute, really, the idea of science. Though that idea of science is right, it will be persecuted. Every pioneer of truth will be persecuted. But that is only going on until we handle, really, the error within ourselves and abroad. That we see all this persecution is just of no power, of no, has no channel, has no terminology, has no possibilities, nothing at all, because it is nothing, it cannot work as something. And only if we go right through that and are absolutely at rest, absolutely at rest in regard to what could happen against the idea, then we find our peace and our rest, and are no more a target for persecution. So that persecution, if we feel persecution, I always felt, well, that's my own business. Why do I feel I'm a target for that? I'm not going up to put up myself anymore as a target for persecution, for misinterpretation, because the idea of science is that what matters, and that cannot be killed at all. Okay? That's life. That's life for this evening. I hope you see something more deeper than before. Tomorrow we take then the subject of truth.